Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For all you elk hunters out there, chasing turkeys is basically the same thing. I know the reaction you just gave me, but don't knock it till you try it, and don't try it without OnX. The Hunt app will not only help you find new areas on public ground, but I use it to find out landowner info to get permission on private ground that I see birds on as well. OnX Hunt has a special offer for you. Use code CAL to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt and find more birds this spring.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MeatEater for 10% off your purchase.
From Meat Eater's World News Headquarters in Bozeman, Montana, this is Cal's Week in Review, presented by Steel. Steel products are available only at authorized dealers. For more, go to steeldealers.com. Now, here's your host, Ryan Cal Callahan.
The Washington State Fish and Wildlife Commission voted earlier this month to suspend the state's permit-only spring black bear hunt. Opponents argued that the hunt threatens the bear population and is a, quote, cruel way to kill black bears as they attempt to recover from hibernation and raise their cubs. Supporters of the hunt, which include the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, argued that the spring hunt is a key tool to manage the bear population, mitigate tree and property damage, limit ungulate mortality, and reduce human-bear conflicts. Side note, if you're wondering about the tree damage part of the bear situation, and you need a good short read and some context regarding black bears and tree conflict, find Born Under a Stump, The Life and Legend of Big Bill Hewlett by Russ Hewlett. The word cambium will forever be blazed into your brain. Anyway, they also pointed out that spring hunts have been taking place in the state for decades without apparent harm to the bear population. In 2021, only a single lactating female was harvested among the 124 total bears killed that spring. By the way, 124 bears is not a lot of bears. In addition, the spring hunt represents only a fraction of the total bear harvest. Over the past 5 years, Washington's average fall black bear harvest was 1,556 animals, while the spring average was only 114. In short, the commission's decision does not appear based in the science the state of Washington invests in, and hunters pay for. The hunt accomplishes several important management goals without threatening the bear population or resulting in the large-scale death of sows with cubs. So, why did commissioners vote to suspend the 2022 spring bear hunt in Washington? There are several reasons. First, you should know that the vote literally could not have been closer. The commission is supposed to have 9 members representing different regions of the state, but Democratic Governor Jay Inslee has dragged his feet appointing a 9th commissioner. This spring, the spring bear hunt must be reauthorized every year, so the commission's 4-4 split vote suspended the hunt. Commissioners who voted against the hunt questioned whether the Department of Fish and Wildlife was accurately estimating the bear population, but one of their main arguments had nothing to do with science. Quote, "Like it or not, it's a social issue that we have many people concerned about," said Commissioner Frank Kuntz during a recent commission meeting. Kuntz argued that if they don't succumb to social pressure to ban the hunt, animal rights groups could turn to the legislature or a ballot initiative. "Then, all of a sudden, we have a bigger problem than we ever imagined," he said. Commissioner Larry Carpenter, who also voted no, made a similar argument in an interview with Northwest Sportsman. Many believed Carpenter would vote to continue the spring hunt, but he disappointed expectations this year, he says, to get the hunt on more solid ground for the long term. He wants to put the spring hunt on the docket again next year when, hopefully, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has a firmer grasp on the current state of the black bear population. The question, of course, is whether the animal rights activists who currently oppose the hunt will be convinced by any amount of new scientific evidence. I'm going to go out on a limb and say no, they won't at all. They don't like black bear hunting, they don't like hunting, and this is what they do. Their arguments aren't based on science or reason. They're based on emotion, and they're using their small group of passionate supporters to put pressure on commissioners. In this arena, they've kicked our butts. At the public comment meeting, 50 of the 53 people who testified opposed the hunt, according to Northwest Sportsman. They described the hunt as unethical, a trophy hunt, an outrage, and, quote, recreational assassination. In light of this overwhelming public opposition, it's no wonder the commission voted to suspend the hunt. Maybe, it goes without saying, but the hunting community has to do better. We need to show up to these commission meetings, we need to contact our representatives, and we need to stop assuming that the anti-hunting lobby will ever be satisfied with anything but a total hunting ban. Back in the 90s, these animal rights groups convinced Washington to ban bear baiting and bear hunting with dogs, but they weren't satisfied. Now, they're going after bear hunting altogether, and they're picking the spring hunt as their first easy target. It's possible the commission votes to reinstate the spring hunt next year. I hope they do. The North American model of wildlife conservation is one of the greatest conservation success stories in history, and it's been largely driven and funded by hunters and anglers. Waterfowl, turkeys, mule deer, and black bass thrive today thanks to this model. Keep track of your state's wildlife commission meetings, and when the time comes, tell that story. Explain why many of America's most iconic animals owe their survival to the outdoor community, and when providing testimony at your commission meeting, which I know you will do, be prepared and practiced to succinctly state why hunting is important to you, your community, and how you utilize the animals you kill when you are fortunate enough to connect with one. My experience at meetings like this is that non-hunters assume that every time a hunter hits the woods, an animal dies. A little context on how much time in the woods is needed on average to bring something home is helpful, especially when you are filling up the vehicle and buying groceries in the small communities that border your favorite locations. I guarantee you, just because you don't want to show up to the meetings doesn't mean the animal rights folks don't want to either. This week, we've got Wisconsin whitetails, ticks, transmissions, and the Kings game. But first, I'm going to tell you about my week. And my week has all of a sudden gone from a disappointing 75 degrees in Kansas to a feels a heck of a lot colder than the thermometer reads 11 degrees in Wisconsin. I've been visiting my friend and longtime friend of Meat Eater, Doug Duran. Doug, busy as always, has had me out for the last 2 days of muzzleloader season and the first ever doe derby, which coincidentally coincides with the last doe season, rifle season, of the year. The Doe Derby is a concoction of his that is an attempt to incentivize landowners to allow hunters, particularly new hunters onto their property, to kill white-tailed does, and to incentivize hunters in general to get out and take advantage of a final rifle season aimed at, you guessed it, harvesting more white-tailed does. In previous years, many landowners and the state of Wisconsin have recognized that there are an overabundance of whitetails in many counties. Overpopulation has effects on agriculture, including woodlots, and higher deer densities lead to more accidents on the roadways and higher concentrations of CWD, brainworm, and other diseases. If you have heard of Doug Duran, you probably at this point associate him with chronic wasting disease or CWD. Doug has, perhaps, more than most, possibly less than some, taken CWD very seriously. Although Doug has never personally killed a deer with CWD during his hunting season, He has been positively motivated by the sight of CWD-infected deer to, you know, be proactive about things. Chronic wasting disease, as everybody knows by now, right, is a folded-over protein, a prion that builds for 12 to 14 months to really we don't quite know, and in the later stages starts poking little holes in ungulates' brains. They in turn have a slow, miserable, drooling death. It's not pretty. Chronic wasting disease is relatively new on the landscape. We don't truly know all the things that we do need to know about it. Speaking with a local biologist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, their stance is, help us out by participating in voluntary CWD testing of your deer. A negative test result or a non-positive test result is just as important as a positive test result. What they're trying to do is they're trying to understand how CWD spreads, at what rate, in what age of animals is it most prevalent, and they need your help to do it. Keep in mind, you could take chronic wasting disease and think about it in terms of COVID. Not a darned person on the planet loves to be told what to do. The word mandatory, be it quarantine or face masks or that super scary word vaccine, sounds very good with the word mandatory in front of it, or behind it, or associated with it in any way. However, voluntary is a good thing. And right now, with chronic wasting disease, before it possibly spreads to humans, or other animals, such as cattle, that consume the exact same grass that an infected deer could cough up prions onto. Just so you know that I'm not, you know, the preacher, but also part of the choir, I guess. The deer that my girlfriend shot on the last day of Montana hunting season, we turned in the head to Montana Fish and Game. They tested for CWD, and we just got a negative or non-positive test result on that animal. So, you know, we're harvesting deer in a zone that is not known for CWD, but we are hunters who care about the resource. It's very easy for us and for all of you truly to turn in a head or a set of lymph nodes to add to the information surrounding chronic wasting disease. We're citizen scientists.
Science rules.
Hunting is conservation, remember? Anyway, moving on. Scientists at Yale University have developed a new vaccine against ticks that's been successful in early testing on guinea pigs. Now, if you don't own a guinea pig, this still applies to you. You might think I'm being sort of imprecise here, because, you know, shouldn't it be a vaccine against tick-borne diseases, not the ticks themselves? If we need something effective against a tick, isn't that what the flea and tick collars we get for dogs are for? But that's the extremely smart thing about this vaccine. It is actually targeting compounds in the saliva of the ticks rather than any of the specific diseases that the saliva carries. Sort of like shutting down a road rather than trying to disable all the specific cars on that road. This is a good approach because ticks carry a lot of different diseases. You have likely heard of or even contracted Lyme's disease. I have. Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Or the dreaded alpha-gal syndrome, which makes you violently allergic to red meat. But ticks can also give you typhus, rickettsial pox, Bhutanese fever, African tick bite fever, Flinders Island spotted fever, Queensland typhus, Q fever, Colorado tick fever, Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, tularemia, tick-borne relapsing fever, babesiosis, ehrlichiosis, meningeal encephalitis, bovine anaplasmosis, Heartland virus, and something called the Bourbon virus, which I need to look into further, but I guarantee is less fun than it sounds, and that's just a selection. Remember, you can always correct my pronunciation at ASKCAL, that's spelled Ask Cal at themeateater.com. Trying to develop a vaccine for all of these nasties is therefore much more complicated than just going after the compounds that almost all ticks everywhere have in their saliva. In the Yale trials, vaccine antibodies attacked those proteins at the site of the tick bite quickly creating a visible redness that let scientists locate and remove the ticks before they had time to transmit their nasty cargo. This is important because, as you likely know, one of the most dangerous things about ticks is how hard they are to detect. When they bite you, they inject compounds known as evasins, which deactivate the inflammatory response, like itching and redness, that comes with other kinds of insect bites. That term, evasin, as you can probably tell, comes from the word evasive, the quality of being able to avoid or bypass something. If you need it in a sentence, Ol' Cal is out evasin tick-borne diseases. That's called a joke, folks. Anyway, making a tick bite more annoying makes it easier to find and get rid of the tick. One of the lead authors on the study, Errol Fickrig, said, quote, "When you feel a mosquito bite, you swat it. With the tick vaccine, there is a redness and likely an itch, so you can recognize that you have been bitten and can pull the tick off quickly. Remember, early detection is key to curbing the effects of Lyme's disease, let alone all the rest of those hard-to-pronounce diseases." Interestingly, the compounds that cause this redness and itching, called chemokines, also cause other inflammatory diseases when they get out of control in the body, such as asthma, arthritis, and cancer. Evasins, like those in tick saliva, are therefore being studied as a possible treatment for inhibiting chemokines to treat these illnesses. One person's trash, or tick bite rather, is another's treasure. Anyway, in addition to making tick bites more detectable, the Yale vaccine also prevented ticks from feeding as successfully and made them much easier to dislodge. Scientists took parts of the genetic code for tick saliva and embedded them in messenger RNA, or mRNA. mRNA tells other DNA in your body what kind of proteins to create. The body reads that tick saliva code and produces the corresponding antibodies. The common metaphor for mRNA vaccines is that they are the blueprint for a virus or antigen. It's as though the body were looking at a plan of a house and deciding where to put the furniture rather than having to walk into a fully built spec house to make the same decisions.
Luke Holmes, solid as a rock.
If you remember back to our episode on antivenom, when old Snort was bitten by a rattler, you'll recall that the antivenom works on a similar vaccine model of prompting the body to create antibodies with harmless versions of venom molecules. Some dog trainers will even use antivenom in advance to, in effect, vaccinate their dogs against snake bites. So many in our lifetimes will see this development of mRNA antivenom vaccines. There's obviously been a lot of vaccine hesitancy recently, but it will be interesting to see whether the tick vaccine will get skeptics over the line. There are a whole lot of people who live for eating red meat, and facing the possibility of contracting alpha-gal and then finding barbecue disgusting is something anyone can take seriously, even you Texans. Which of you listening right now took a class in school about Family Finances 101? No one? Yeah, me neither. Just like the importance of a will or college savings plan or even life insurance or estate planning, we have to know these things. But how do we figure it all out? That's why I'm excited to partner with Fabric by Gerber Life. Listen, one of the few things expected of you in life is to not let other people pick up after you. That's why I have life insurance, to make sure my stuff is taken care of even when I'm gone. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance you can get done right here, right now. You could be covered from your couch in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/cal. That's meetfabric.com/cal. M-E-E-T, fabric.com/cal. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's OReillyAuto.com/meateater. Pay attention here because this is a hell of a good service. It's called the Wellness Company. Picture this, okay? You wake up, you got a scratchy throat, you're all congested, you got a runny nose, you got a cough, whatever. And you weigh your options, like you tough it out, get sick, take time off work, try to get a doctor's appointment sometime in the next few months, wait 2 hours at urgent care and sit in a room full of six sick folks. Or you open your medical emergency kit. You match your symptoms to the doctor recommended prescription, and you start on the right meds right away. These medical emergency kits, not a first aid kit, all right? It comes with doctor-prescribed meds to treat over 39 medical issues. So, on hand, strong antibiotics for infections of all types. Plus, a doctor's easy guide so you know exactly what to take and when. No waiting to see the doctor, no waiting at the pharmacy. It's all in there. Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit. Order yours online in minutes. Your kit will be rushed to your door. Get 15% off at twc.health/meateater, but you got to use the promo code meateater. That's promo code meateater, okay, at twc.health/meateater.
Over to the tea and crumpets desk. The National Trust in the UK has banned the practice known as trail hunting on all of its land, almost 620,000 acres across England, Wales, and Northern Ireland. Trail hunting is what people invented after fox hunting was banned in the UK in 2004. Instead of chasing a real fox, a rag soaked in fox scent is dragged along a course. The dogs follow the scent, and hunters on horseback in very specific outfits chase the dogs and blow a horn and do all the things that you see in old cartoons, which, you know, approximates the original hunt as best they can. That likely sounds pretty harmless to you, and you might wonder why it would be banned. Well, earlier this year, the head of Britain's main fox hunting organization was caught leading webinars teaching people to pretend to be trail hunting while actually hunting live foxes. That's right, they're still learning what the internet is. This corroborated the claims of anti-hunters who said that trail hunting had always just been a smokescreen for illegal fox hunts, which in turn led to the trail hunting ban on National Trust lands. We talked about fox hunting around this time last year because Boxing Day, the day after Christmas, is traditionally the biggest fox hunt of the year. In that episode, we talked about another smokescreen fox hunters had been using, toting along a falcon, because hunting foxes with falcons is legal in the UK, and it should be because raptors are extremely cool. However, folks even use this as another loophole to just chase foxes with horses, which equated to even more bad publicity. And no matter what you think about hunting foxes in particular, there are a whole bunch of things about this story that might make you glad to be hunting, well, anywhere outside the United Kingdom. First off, let's look at the entity that's implementing this particular ban. The name National Trust might make you think of our national parks, but in Britain, the public doesn't own any land at all. The National Trust is a private organization that has taken control of certain culturally important pieces of land, as well as certain historical buildings and objects, in order to preserve those things and make sure they never get sold off, which is a fantastic mission. But when you get right down to it, regular Joes, or I guess regular Nigels in this case, can only access National Trust land because the National Trust agrees to let them do so. This is a similar setup to all the other land that the public can access in the United Kingdom. Traditionally, large estate owners would set aside areas so that non-landowners could graze animals, cut hay, so on. And this territory is still known as the commons. Those who use it are known as commoners. And you thought you wouldn't learn anything today. Similarly, people are able to walk all across Britain because private landowners agree to leave walking trails open. Again, this is really nice of the private landowners, and the tradition of, quote, right to roam is very, very strong in the UK, but there is no fundamental right at the bottom of it all for the public to be in those places. And throughout British history, many pieces of land traditionally set aside for commoners became more enclosed and inaccessible. Part of the reason fox hunting got started in the first place was because tracts of land big enough to support deer habitat were split up, and eventually there were very few deer left to hunt. The other thing about the British trail hunting news that makes me happy to live and hunt in the United States is reading about the anti-hunters in the United Kingdom. Just the names of those organizations give you an idea of what it's like over there. The League Against Cruel Sports is one. But my favorite is the Hunt Saboteurs Association. Over here, it is against the law to harass hunters in the field. Over there, the harassment you can put right in the title of your organization. These groups are pressuring other landowners in the UK to ban trail hunting as well, like the Ministry of Defense, Forestry of England, and the Crown, you know, the Queen. Again, no public ownership of land over there. Even just finding out who owns land in the UK is almost impossible. Much of that information is a closely guarded secret. The idea of walking around with Onyx on your phone and seeing who owns what is kind of out of the question. You might be wondering why I'm going on about hunting and land ownership in Britain. Well, the first reason is that this is the time of year we traditionally pause and express our gratitude for the good things in our lives. I feel very grateful for my ability to drive down the road to land I own in common with the rest of you and pursue animals to feed myself and my loved ones. And second, I need to include some news from the UK, not just for my listeners over there who will write in and let me know what to think about my writings. But also, I'm talking about the UK because certain things here in the US of A are really not so different after all if you're paying attention. Consider the recent ban on trapping on public land in New Mexico. Consider the closing of public land to non-subsistence hunters in Alaska. Or that Washington State bear hunt suspension we mentioned earlier. Just recently, the Center for Biological Diversity filed a lawsuit against U.S. Fish and Wildlife for expanding hunting on national wildlife refuges. And what should maybe make us most uncomfortable when we compare ourselves to the United Kingdom? Consider that only 4% of the land in Britain is considered developed, meaning very little over there is irreversibly messed up. Defining quote-unquote developed land in the U.S. is difficult, and by far the largest land use category in America is cattle grazing, but the fastest growing land use category in the U.S. is urban sprawl. And right up there is acquisition of land by wealthy buyers. In fact, according to the Land Report magazine, between 2008 and 2018, the amount of land owned by the 100 largest private landowners grew from 28 million acres to 40 million acres, an area larger than the state of Florida. While that in itself can be, and in a lot of instances has been, a very good thing, it's only a good thing if it's left in open space. And not turned into those terrible ranchettes. You know, you've heard me talk about this. We want cows, not condos. Cow elk are, you know, something to consider too. Along with this list of threats is a growing push to privatize and monetize wildlife. So, while we feel grateful for what we have, we've got to stay extremely frosty to protect and expand it. Let's not let the relationship between hunters and non-hunters get as bad in America as it seems to be in the UK. Hunters in the UK are marginalized easily because hunting there is expensive, almost exclusively an upper-class activity that long, long ago excluded the commoners. So, if you had success in the field this fall, how about inviting over some non-hunters for some of that venison backstrap or goose leg confit? Maybe during this dinner party, see if you can work in a few key concepts about hunting licenses and tags, paying for conservation, or even how cool it is that here We have over 640 million acres of public land to go out and enjoy. And, by the way, did you know that in the U.S., the game is owned by the people? And what a great concept that is! Doesn't matter where that white-tailed buck deer sits, if he's on public or on private, it is not property of the landowner, but of the people, and managed by the state. You know, get all that across without being too long-winded. That's all I've got for you this week. Thank you so much for listening. If you have not noticed, winter has finally started to arrive. You may want to go to www.steeldealers.com and be prepared, as I am, with a clean, quiet, powerful steel battery-powered chainsaw. Toss her behind your seat. You never know when you'll need it. And last but not least, write in to ASKCAL. That's AskCal@TheMeatEater.com and let me know what's going on in your neck of the woods. Thanks again, and I'll talk to you next week.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MeatEater for 10% off your purchase.
Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more. That's SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.